Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. Today we try again for a potpourri, a jumble of several different themes. We end up with, well, maybe two, Gaza and Latin America. Or maybe it's all part of the same old story. In any case, I hope you'll stay tuned. When I started planning a weekly radio show, almost 7 years ago, I intended each show to be a hodgepodge. This and that and whatnot, reflecting whatever caught my interest that week. It never worked out that way. I don't know why, but every installment of the show ended up tied together by one common theme. For 333 consecutive shows. I don't know why. It's just the way my mind works. One week, I even planned a hodgepodge and titled the show Potpourri. That's a French euphemism for hodgepodge. But I couldn't pull it off. And as I recall, my Potpourri show turned out to be all about Israeli military aggression. That was several years ago. I've spoken about Israel far too little on this program. And by Israel, I don't mean the promised land of the persecuted Jews. I mean the UN member political state, with its flag and its high-tech military and its billions of dollars annually in US aid, and its still undefined borders, and its colony next door, Palestine. Its colony that it is occupying and settling and colonizing, and where it continues to engage in what might best be called ethnic cleansing. I've spoken too little about Israel because I can scarcely find a way to begin. The language used and not used by the entire U.S. media to describe that country's actions is so foreign to my understanding of reality. Hence, the language parroted by 90% of Americans to describe Israel's actions is so foreign to my understanding of reality. So foreign, I'm at a loss for a common language. I don't know where to begin. To America, Israel's action is not bloody murder, it's self-defense. It's not ethnic cleansing, it's self-defense. It's not colonization, it's self-defense. It's not a military occupation of Palestine by Israel, it's, well, we're not saying. In the American language, Gaza is not the world's largest internment camp. It's a seaside resort on the sunny Mediterranean. The people of Gaza are not kept malnourished and hungry by Israel's blockade. They're just watching their weight. If I talk in that American language, I can find lots of people nodding their heads in agreement. I've been negligently avoiding the entire subject because I can't think of any way to communicate with people whose language is so radically different from mine. I mean my fellow Americans, not the Israelis. In Israel, there are many citizens vocally and actively opposing their country's Palestine occupation. Among them are some prominent Israeli journalists, such as Amira Haas and Uri Avneri. Not in America, though. You want a free press representing a diversity of viewpoints on Israel? Move to Tel Aviv. You won't find it in America. Okay, if you don't want to move to Tel Aviv, move your eyes and ears to the alternative media. There you can find a wider range of voices on the subjects of Israel and Palestine, including the dissident Israeli journalists I mentioned, Amira Haas and Uri Avneri. You'll find them on progressive websites such as commondreams.org and counterpunch.org. I should mention a very useful website focusing on Israel-Palestine issues. It's called thestruggle.org. That's put together by my fellow Connecticut person, Stanley Heller. Thestruggle.org. Well worth a look. Common Dreams pointed me to an inspiring little video produced by a group called Jewish Voice for Peace. It features close-up shots of several 20-something young Jews who declare their active opposition to the Israeli government's colonization and oppression of Palestine. They speak in more general terms, but that's obviously the point. It's a nice video. I find it very moving, especially as the speakers are all young. As Morris Berman noted last week, we don't find much rebellion, or even critical questioning, or even critical thinking among the youth today. Their minds have been thoroughly colonized by the corporations and corporate media, and so have their schools. I teach in a college, and I quite agree with Berman. But here in the video are a few exceptions. Some of the speakers have rings through their nose, but they're talking in a way I haven't heard young people talk since the days of Tom Hayden and Mario Savio, since the late 1960s. Let's have a listen.
We exist.
We are everywhere. We speak and love and dream in every language.
We pray three times a day.
Or only during the high holidays.
Or when we feel like we really need to.
Or not at all.
We are punks and students.
And parents.
And janitors.
And rabbis.
And freedom fighters.
We are your children, your grandchildren.
Occupation has constricted our throats and fattened our tongues.
We are feeding each other new words.
We travel between worlds and we redraw the map every day.
This is not our birthright, this is our necessity.
We remember slavery in Egypt.
We remember hiding our celebrations and ritual.
We remember the camps.
We remember when we aged too quickly.
We remember that we are still young. We honor a legacy of radical intellectuals and refugees.
We remember how to make our homes and our holiness
out of time and thin air.
We do not need other people's lands to build on.
We remember solidarity as a means of survival.
And we are proud.
We refuse to have our histories appropriated by a corporate war machine.
We will not call this liberation.
We will not be won over by free vacations and scholarship money.
We will not accept a legacy of terror.
We will not quietly witness the violation of human rights in Palestine.
We are better than this.
We have ancestors to honor. We have allies to honor.
We have ourselves to honor.
We commit ourselves to peace.
We will stand up with honest bodies to offer honest bread.
We commit to re-envisioning homeland.
To make room for justice.
We will stand up. We will take this to the courts and to the streets.
We will stand up. We will take this to the courts and to the streets.
We will stand up. We will take this to the courts and to the streets.
We will stand up. We will take this to the courts.
We will stand
and to the streets.
We will take this to the courts.
We will stand up.
And
we will take this to the courts and to the streets.
Into the streets.
We will learn.
We will teach this in the schools and in our homes.
We demand daylight for our stories.
For all stories.
We will not stop. We exist.
We are young Jews, and we get to decide what that means.
We are young Jews, and we get to decide what that means.
We are young Jews, and we get to decide.
We are young Jews,
and we get to decide what that means.
We get to decide what that means.
We are young Jews.
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 We are young Jews, and we get to decide what that means.
We are young Jews, and we get to decide what that means.
And the text on the screen reads, "If you are young, Jewish and proud, join us. If you are proud to join this fight for justice, support us." Jewish Voice for Peace. www.youngjewishproud.org. I am neither young, nor Jewish, nor proud, but I say more power to him. Actually, it was an article about Honduras that got me thinking about Israel. By way of President Barack, change we can believe in Obama. His presidency is bracketed by news from Gaza and news from Honduras. Right after the 2008 U.S. elections, Israel launched a massive bombing and shelling attack on Gaza. Operation Cast Lead, they called it. The attack included Israel's bombing a UN refugee camp in Gaza, with illegal white phosphorus bombs, a multiple war crime. President-elect Barack Obama had no comment, saying that foreign affairs were the business of the sitting president. As I recall, President George W. Bush sat and said only the usual excuse of Israel's right to self-defense. Then, weeks after Obama's inauguration in 2009, the U.S. helped overthrow the democratically elected president of Honduras in a coup. President Zelaya was an aristocrat, but a mild social reformer, who had just endorsed raising the country's pitifully low minimum wage. But mild reform was too much reform for Wall Street and for its enforcement arm, the United States government. So we deposed Zelaya before he could hurt the profits of the companies that make your shirts and keep you supplied with bananas. Now, as the Obama presidency enters its lame duck period, Israel has launched another massive assault on its colony next door, and Honduras is again in the news. The children of Honduras are fleeing their wrecked country and seeking asylum in the United States. Here's a nice article on the subject by journalist Ted Rawl. I have edited and condensed it for radio. Published July 12, 2014 by Common Dreams Online. It's titled, "Those Kids Crossing the Border from Mexico Wouldn't Be There If Obama Hadn't Supported a Coup the Media Doesn't Talk About," by Ted Rawl. You've probably heard the latest crisis at the border. Tens of thousands of children crossing the desert from Mexico into the United States. They surrender to the Border Patrol in hope of being allowed to remain here permanently. The Obama administration has asked Congress for new funding to process and deport them. But you probably haven't heard the depressing backstory. The reason so many Central Americans are sending their children on a dangerous 1,000-mile journey up the spine of Mexico, where they ride atop freight trains, endure shakedowns by corrupt police, and face rapists, bandits, and other predators. NPR and other mainstream news outlets are parroting the White House, which blames unscrupulous human smugglers for lying to the children's parents about asylum. But in fact, many of these kids have a strong legal case for asylum. Unfortunately, U.S. officials are ignoring the law. The sad truth is that this crisis at the border is yet another example of blowback. Blowback is an unintended negative consequence of U.S. political, military, or economic intervention overseas. When something we did in the past comes back to bite us. 9/11 is the classic example. More recent cases include U.S. support for Islamist insurgents in Libya and Syria. This support destabilized both countries and led to the murders of U.S. officials in Benghazi and to the rise of ISIS, the guerrilla army that now imperils the U.S.-backed Maliki regime in Baghdad. Ted Rawl continues, "The new child immigrants crossing from Mexico are not Mexicans, but people from Central American nations devastated by a century of American colonialism and imperialism. Much of that intervention was surprisingly recent." Quote, "The unaccompanied children crossing the border into the United States are leaving behind mainly three Central American countries, Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala. The first two are among the world's most violent, and all three have deep poverty," unquote. So concludes a report by the Pew Foundation. Quote, "El Salvador ranked second in terms of homicides in Latin America in 2001, and it is still high on the list. Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador are among the poorest nations in Latin America. 17% of Salvadorans, 26% of Guatemalans, and 30% of Hondurans live on less than $2 a day. Unquote. Sidebar comment, in all three countries, the United States government has repeatedly used violence to overthrow reformist elected governments and to crush popular movements seeking social and economic reform. The United States has repeatedly installed vicious military dictators who have terrorized and murdered their citizens by the thousands. It has paid untold millions of dollars to arm, support, and train these dictators' militaries and their paramilitary death squads and their torture centers. Back to the text. The fact that Honduras is the biggest source of the exodus jumped out at me. That's because in 2009, the United States government, under President Obama, supported a military coup that overthrew the democratically elected president of Honduras. Quote, Washington has a very close relationship with the Honduran military, which goes back decades, unquote, the Guardian newspaper noted at the time. Quote, during the 1980s, the U.S. used bases in Honduras to train and arm the Contras. These were Nicaraguan paramilitaries who became known for their atrocities in the war against the Sandinista government in neighboring Nicaragua, unquote. Rawl continues, since the recent coup against President Manuel Zelaya, Honduras has entered a downward death spiral of drug-related bloodshed and political revenge killings that crashed the economy, brought an end to law, order, and civil society, and now has some analysts calling it a failed state. El Salvador and Guatemala are suffering similar conditions. Like Honduras, these countries are also narco-states devastated by decades of U.S. support for oppressive, corrupt, right-wing dictatorships. Okay, so ends a nice little piece by Ted Rawl. Rawl is pretty much a mainstream, middle-of-the-road journalist. Maybe a liberal, but not at all radical. So it was striking and encouraging to hear him actually use language like, quote, Central American nations devastated by a century of American colonialism and imperialism, unquote. Wow! But like most mainstream journalists, Rawl overlooks the economic, corporate dimensions of U.S. foreign policy. Throughout the Third World, the U.S. government has repeatedly assassinated or overthrown democratically elected governments and installed brutal military dictatorships in their place. But why? It makes no sense. Well, it makes no sense until you look at the effect of U.S. foreign interventions on corporate profits. Bingo! As Michael Parenti once memorably put it, the purpose of U.S. foreign policy is to make the world safe for the Fortune 500. So Rawl neglects to mention that we deposed Honduras' President Zelaya weeks after he came out in favor of raising his country's minimum wage. Raise it from something like $1 an hour to something like maybe $2 an hour. Check your closet. You might find that 30% of the garments in it are manufactured in Honduras. Could there be a connection? Ted Rawl focuses on Honduras and mentions Guatemala only in passing. Guatemala is another big source of child refugees. The United States has overthrown the democratically elected governments of Guatemala multiple times, each time replacing it with a dictatorship or junta who would better guard our big corporations' interests. We famously did this in the early 1950s on behalf of the United Fruit Company, now Chiquita Brands. and we did it again in recent decades. Our last coup in Guatemala led to a wave of government-sponsored terror against their citizens. One of the two or three best songs by Bruce Cockburn is on the very subject. Let's hear it.
Today, everybody scatters, and the hopes it goes away. How many kids they've murdered, only God can say. Water rises to my eyes. situation desperate. Echoes of the victim's cry. If I had a rocket launcher. If I had a rocket launcher. If I had a rocket launcher, some son of a bitch would die.
We're approaching the end of my second serious all-out attempt to construct a potpourri, a show consisting of several different segments all tossed together. And I guess I was a little more successful this time. Instead of one common theme for the entire half hour, we got it up to two. We talked about Israel-Palestine, specifically Gaza. And we talked about U.S. imperialism in Latin America, specifically Honduras and Guatemala. Or maybe there's a single common theme here after all, which is the presidency of Barack H. Obama, the man who campaigned on the slogan, "Change we can believe in," and who gave us 8 more years of the same. As did every president before him, back to at least my ancestor Grover Cleveland, with the partial exception of Franklin D. Roosevelt. Well, potpourri or not, I thank you for listening to New World Notes. We come to you from the spacious underground studios of WWUHFM, a community service of that beacon of light in darkest Connecticut, the University of Hartford. Check out our free archive of past shows at our website, which is newworldnotes.blogspot.com. On behalf of the entire New World Notes staff, this is Kenneth Doust, wishing you a good week, urging illegitimi non carborundum, and reminding you that, U.S. foreign policy notwithstanding, war is not healthy for children and other living things, including the earth we live on. Ciao.